Okay, Jema. So we continue. We took up this image of wave and the sea because this is the image which very commonly we'll see all over. Lot of Swamiji speaking about it to say that this is an unreal play, but on the contrary, it gives can be a completely different perspective that we too can be as the ocean playing with the waves. So while when we identify with the ocean, we don't abandon the wave, then wave gets all its strength and power and delight. So this is the first fundamental thing. The second, as an example, which, you know, there are so many examples which exist in nature, which explain to us this. So we have in India the tradition of bringing Ganga water to home. Everybody who goes, you know, gets in the bottle. And I don't know, it's many places it's not even Ganga, but they give nice water in sealed bottles. So we don't know whether it's actually somebody's taken care to, because that water is quite dirty. How do they really make a pure Ganga water, whether they go through the distilled process or not, I don't know. But nevertheless, it's kept in homes, at least it used to be in Indian homes, as Ganga water. So when people are dying on special occasions, it was like, take Ganga water. Now even this is a far-fetched thing because, you know, you have to get, you don't know, distilled water, what is it? Then there was a third way of having Ganga water. So some of us may have grown up in that tradition that when you take a bath, so there used to be a verse that people used to say, Gange che Yamune che Kaveri che. So you are invoking all the waters of all the rivers in your. So now look at this. This is very beautiful. Actually, the story of Ganga, how it originates in the heart of Vishnu, goes into the, you know, Kamandalu of Brahma, goes into the Jata of Shiva, then flows on earth. And different names, but that's a long, wonderful story. So, but the, and then it can go to that point where you are taking well water and in your house, and you are invoking the presence of Ganga and taking with it. So now, basically, what is it about? There is something, it's the same divine who has taken this form and aspect. And this form is true in the subtle worlds, it's true in the flowing water, and when you take away in a little bottle with your faith or maybe real, it's this form, is a form of Ganga, the power of Ganga, and then when you are invoking, it's still the same Ganga. So meaning thereby that the form is not just an illusion, and it's needed for the multiplicity and variety of the play. Now if you take it from the egoistic point of view, supposing you are in the bottle, your little Ganga water in the bottle. And you say, people say, I am Ganga water. I have nothing of the Ganga. I know Ganga is so mighty, so wonderful river flowing down the plains. That's what the water is heard. But where is the Ganga in me? This, as scientists have found, actually even that can be invoked. There are actual experiments. Now this has got implications. That if we can live, we live either in the sense of the ego that I am a limited individual. And therefore, I am limited. It's the same story of the lion cub living forever, that I am brought up by the goat and I am a little kid, goat kid. Till somebody says you are a lion cub. And then says roar. Now we too live like limited beings. I am Mr. So and so, this and this and this, constant fight, conflict. But the day I discover that I am part of that Ganga, then it changes the whole, not only perspective, the power, because it's the same power which can manifest. And this was the whole meaning behind many of the rituals that, you know, the rishis would do. We have done all this in home, you know, before eating, we'll put a little water, put it around and pray. That we are offering this food to God. I don't know how many. I have grown up in that system. So I know, you know, what it meant. Now we have forgotten all about it. So similarly, you will see Rishi is taking some water from the Kamandalu. And suddenly they are invoking it, charging it and throwing it. Meaning thereby, there is a deeper truth which is always there behind the form. There are lovely stories of that. One of the stories is when Jayant, brother of Indra, comes to tease, or rather he is attracted towards Mata Sita. But he is cautioned, be careful, because the man sitting by her side is not just a sannyasi. He is none else but Raghuvar, and be careful. He says, what he will do, I am a god. So he pecks at the feet of Mata Sita. And as she is hurt, the weapons of Ram are inside the kutia, the cottage. Shri Ram picks up a blade of grass. He invokes and throws it. And he goes through all the various lok and cannot find respite. Because, you know, wherever he goes, they say, no, this we cannot do anything. Arey, it's a blade of grass, it's chasing me. Do something. He says, no, you cannot. Because this is not just a blade of grass. The blade of grass has been activated by the power of Lord Rama's consciousness. That's behind it. And we have so many stories like that. Mata Sita also, when Ravan comes and he wants to, you know, violate her, she has nothing to defend. She picks up a blade of grass and says, don't cross this. Now, there is such a power in a word that Ravan stays back. Say, if you cross it, you will be destroyed. There is also another story in the Kena Upanishad, where the Yaksha appears. The gods are having a party. They have booked some nice place in Swarga because they have won against the Asuras. So they are having a party. And that time, the Eternal says they must be also understand that it's not their victory. It's the victory of the Eternal. So they have forgotten that it's not our victory, but the victory of the Divine in us. So the Divine appears as per the Eternal appears. See the Eternal and the individual. And he comes and suddenly they feel that who is he? Identity card. He says, I don't have any identity card. Like Shiva in Dakshi Yagya. I don't have an identity card. I go uninvited. So Indra casually says, Agni, you are Jatvedas. You know everybody. Go and check out who is the person without an identity card. So Agni says, who are you? What is your power? So the Eternal asks him, who are you and what is your power? You first tell me that. So Agni says, I am Agni. I can consume everything. He says, okay. Picks up a blade of grass. Says, you show me. It's not enough. Show me that you can consume this. And the story goes that Agni rushes on that blade of grass with all his might, but cannot do anything. So he comes back and says, I don't know who this creature is. Then again, Vayu goes. And Vayu goes and same question. So he says, oh, you can make everything fly away. This you take. Again, Vayu tries to rush with all his might but can do nothing. Then Indra goes. And when Indra goes, Yaksha disappears. He cannot find him. Until he goes to Mother Hemavati and she tells him, it was none else but the Eternal who came to tell you that all your force is because of him. So you see this little change. One is that this is separate, that is separate. Another is all that I am doing is not my doing. There is a beautiful line by one of the mystics, Dwijendralal Roy, Dilip Kumar Roy's father. Tomar kormo tumi koroma loke bole kori ami. People say it's you, but it's your work which you do. So from here comes the secret of karma yoga. From here comes the secret of living a life which is truly meaningful, beautiful and divine. So that's why he is giving us these lovely examples. So we come on page 391. So he points out about the error. What is the error in this thought? This is on page 399 towards the end, last 10-12 lines. So what is the error? The thought that I am on this supposition able either to take the world as practically real. Actually, this is, without naming it, is Shankaracharya's ultimate Vedanta. That this world is a vyavaharik reality. But in itself, it doesn't have an ultimate reality. So he's using the same terms. But naturally, Sri Aurobindo is not interested in, it's not about philosophers and philosophies. It's about the truth they have given to the world. So he's saying, I am compelled to think out logically and to practical ends. I am on this supposition able either to take the world as practically real and think and act in it, or to reject it as an unreality and cease to think and act. I am not compelled to reconcile contradictions, not called on to be conscious of and conscious in something beyond myself and world, and yet deal from that basis as God does with the world of contradictions. So he says, I have a choice to do one of these. But then on the next page, he says, there is a triple error. Yet is there here a triple error? The error of making an unbridgeable gulf between the absolute and the relative. You see, when people were saying that when you say the mother, you must be meaning that mother, no? Who is the universal supreme mother? And Shubhendu says, uses the word that this is a thought which comes from an adverse, asuric, hostile maya. So that's what the other day I was mentioning, that the traditional Sant Mat people will explain that you don't have to worship Rama. What they worship Rama is the eternal. Ek Ram Dashrath Ka Bita. I had a little dialogue with somebody who said, you know, Ram ki puja, all this is not required. This is not what the yogis said when they use the word Rama. And you will see descriptions. I am not going into the details of all that. Ek Ram Dashrath Ka Bita, Ek Ram Hai Jagat Pasara, Ek Ram Ghat Ghat Ka Vasi, Ek Ram Hai Sabse Nyara. So once I had a little discussion with someone and he said, see, it's not, one doesn't need to do all this. Basically, it is, Rama means that Nyara. I said, you have missed the whole point. The common refrain is Ek. The Ram who is born as the child of Dashrath, the Ram who is universal, the Ram who is immanent, and the Ram who is transcendent are one. This is the way you can look at it. So, this is the Leela of the Avatar. That's why, you know, ki, you can look at it as compartmentalized. Many people do it. Even now they do it. Even with the mother they do it. And Sri Aurobindo took pains. There was someone who said, well, I don't believe in the mother or something like that. And Sri Aurobindo says, then what are you doing here? Even there is a refrain where someone used the word that he is a very great devotee of yours. Only he doesn't believe in the mother. He says, then what kind of devotee is he? You find it so funny, somebody writing like this. And Sri Aurobindo in a very simple way, then what kind of devotee is he? So you see, they are all one reality. That's the whole system, that you can pick up anything and turn it into a image of that reality. This opens doors to so many ways of dealing with life. From picking up a blade of grass and invoking the divine presence, to wearing the mother's symbol, to carrying a blessing packet, to remembering her inwardly, to becoming one with the divine mother, and yet maintain outwardly the so-called individuality. So many, as I said, there are practical aspects of this. It is empowering actually. And also because then we participate in different ways. Pure meditation means my heart does not participate in the oneness with the divine. My work does not participate in the working as a servant of the divine. But I realize him in meditation. So you see, this is where the completeness, samagram mam of the Gita comes in. So he says there is a triple error. The error of making an unbridgeable gulf between the absolute and the relative. And I have a very simple practical example of it. So somebody may say, it actually happened with me when I was, I had just joined the ashram and I was working in the marbling section. I was selling saris. I had never done that, but it taught me all about colors, so I was very happy. And one day all my Air Force colleagues came in, who were used to see me as a wing commander. Suddenly, oh, Vinko, you are here, very happy to see you. I said, I'm also happy, come in. So they came in and I said, see, no, you don't worry, you call that person who is, you know, they're all my juniors now. No, you call the person who will show us the sari. I said, I'll show you the saris. So they were hesitant. They thought I'm just joking, just till somebody comes. Then I started showing, I told the prizes and all. Then there was a strange expression on the, they were uncomfortable. Till they said, you have joined the ashram. I said, yes, I am doing this work. This is my work given to me by the mother. So, the only unfortunate part was they ran away. They couldn't, they became so uncomfortable. That a wing commander from Indian Air Force who is a doctor, he is selling saris. Is my reality different? You see, even in home you will learn this. For a child, you are not some big fellow. You have to listen to the child. So this is a basic thing that all these different forms and names, they are not exclusive of each other. They enrich each other. So this is what, so error is of making an unbridgeable gulf between the absolute and the relative. So I can either be divine or be in this relative world of play. The error of making too simple and rigid and extending too far the law of contradictions, and the error of conceiving in terms of time the genesis of things which have their origin and first habitat in the eternal. Again, we have this example of a baby in the womb. Of course, never tell a mother it's a piece of meat. It's cruel. It's the outer reality. You ask a mother, my baby. Even before the baby is formed, all through it's the baby. Even after the boys, you know, I've seen with in my own thing, they, even when you are, you know, 60 or you are, you know, whatever you are, God knows. But for your mother, you are still a child. So, you see, from that point onwards, the mother identifies that this is not, and that is not just a physical thing, it's the conception she had. So, always we will see that this kind of negation, like, maybe scientists can do it, but that Sri Aurobindo will come to later. But it is not the truth. We are making an unbridgeable gap. Because of the time, what is a piece of meat today, from the scientist's point of view, will become a baby tomorrow. And what is a baby today may become a Shivaji tomorrow. That's exactly how Shivaji's mother brought him up. So we have to understand that there is the physical reality behind which there is a greater truth, which is expressing itself through the physical reality. So this is what he is, describes it. So we mean by the absolute something greater than ourselves, greater than the cosmos which we live in, the supreme reality of that transcendent being which we call God, something without which all that we see or are conscious of as existing could not have been, could not for a moment remain in existence. Indian thought calls it Brahman, European thought calls it absolute. So we have now here departing of ways, two ways in which it is described. So because it antedates everything that is created, so you cannot limit it by this or that. Again, a physical example. If you hold my finger, are you holding just my finger? You're holding me. Actually, you are holding me. But technically, you are holding only my finger. So both these truths, they are not opposing each other. They are complementing each other. So he is reminding us again and again that the Brahman has become all this. So it is true that Brahman is not only beyond all this. None of this defines. Now if you say, oh, you are the finger? No. Are you the hand? No. Then I'm holding your hand. It's equally true. So you see, it's both things are true at the same time. So we can define Brahman as neti neti. Are you this hand? No. Are you this feet? No. Are you this? Are you this heart? No. I exist. Even if none of this body is there, that's the experience in which. But equally I can say, are you this hand? Yes, it's my hand. It's my leg, therefore it's an extension of my being into all this. That's why we have an Indian word called Santan. It literally means an extension of yourself. So it's you extending through the genes, through the consciousness into that, and it goes to that extent that a mother loves the baby. You know, remember Bahubali part one? It closes with this scene. That baby becomes, you know, it makes it so much more complete. It multiplies delight. So that's how, and when, well, to complete that story, when the mother drowns, she yet lives in, what was his name? Whatever, Mahendra something, Bahubali. How does she live? He ends up fulfilling that same mother's wish or urge. So in everyday life, inadequate, all examples are always inadequate. But you will see many examples of the same. Even when she is gone, she is not there visibly, tangibly. Yet he fulfills what she had always wanted. That it is he who should annex the throne. Son of that particular, her favored son. Later on, of course, that we are not here to discuss story of Bahubali one. But basically it implies that. So we can say neti neti. We can equally say iti iti. All this that is the divine. We can equally say that nothing is the divine, because this too is not the divine, because if you take it in the divine is origin, but the same absolute flows into everything. That's why yoga is possible, because since in everything there is the divine, you can pick up anything, maybe a stone. See the practical implication. Put it in Kedarnath and realize the Shivatva through that, because divine is in everything. You can pick up a water from any place and say it is Ganges water, invoke the presence. It has tremendous potential, which nowadays we have lost. Few lines below, we are on page 391, sorry, 391. 391, somewhere a little below the middle. A partial inferior, okay. We see by reason that such an absolute must exist. We become by spiritual experience aware of its existence. But even when we are most aware of it, we cannot describe it, because our language and thought can deal only with the relative. The absolute is for us the ineffable. So, Shobindo is not writing anything which he has not experienced. So it is his experience in the Alipur jail. Everyone is Vasudev. The judge is Vasudev. The lawyer on this side is Vasudev. The lawyer on the other side is Vasudev. What a relief he gets, because Vasudev told, I have arranged the play. You just relax. Chill. You play your role. You have the role of the prisoner. You use that opportunity. So he uses that opportunity to realize Vasudevam Sarvamiti. Because he knows that Vasudev is there in this, that. The lawyer will speak what Vasudev wants him to speak, and so on and so forth. But Sri Aurobindo after that is not saying, you know what, you must go and worship Judge Beechcroft. Actually, you know, he is Vasudev. Now comes Neti Neti. You cannot limit him to anything. At the same time, everything is he. But there is a difference in manifestation that comes much later, not in this chapter, that there are things which reveal the divine much more than things which reveal him much less. That's where we have the guru and that whole parampara. When mother asked about Sri Aurobindo, one of the places she writes in a sentence, the divine, she was asked about divine. She says, the divine is what you adore in Sri Aurobindo. So there will be the human side, maybe certain parts, whatever, transformed, untransformed, people can debate about the body. I mean, it's not interesting. I mean, you can answer that. That's a different story. But that in no way takes away the truth that Sri Aurobindo is the divine. And when you look at the world, everything is divine. But here is a divine who has realized himself consciously of the divine descent upon earth. So while everyone is divine and I can get guidance from anyone, My wife's rebuke can make me a Kalidas or a Tulsidas, because she is also divine. But it won't go beyond the rebuke. But when you come at the feet of the mother and Aurobindo, you can realize, because that's the difference. In manifestation, you have a hierarchy, you have a plain time. And that's where the beauty of Neti Neti and Iti Iti lies. Okay. So we can go on, but I'll come to that rope and snake, because he keep hearing so many videos on that. So it takes up that, the logical, illogical aspects. Page 392. As a man mistakes a rope for a serpent, but since either our individual consciousness is itself a relative supported by the Brahman and only existent by it, not a real reality, or since in its reality it is itself the Brahman, it is the Brahman after all which imposes on itself in us this delusion and mistakes in some figure of its own consciousness an existent rope for a non-existent snake. It's very interesting. And it's interesting to the most practical level. Imagine you are going on a road and you see something lying out there. Now, this will not help you. Oh, maybe it's just a rope. It's an illusion. It is Brahman. You will wait. You will see whether Brahman is moving or not. And even if whatever it is, you have to understand that in this world of relativities, you must know the law of truth of each thing. So therefore, he reminds us this fallacy, which people use very casually. And that's why Shankaracharya had to put in the vyavarik element. Because otherwise, you can't deal with life. All this is Brahman. So, you know, if you have a heart attack, doctor is happy if you go and say, I am a realized person. He'll say, okay, what is the problem? Everything is nothing. Whether you die or you live, it is nothing. But see, when you have a heart attack or you have a stroke, your nothingness comes to everythingness. So we must not forget that everything, both are simultaneously true. This is where Aurobindo is taking us. So few lines below, he brings us the supramental rationality, because there is a limited rationality which sees things as either or. Last five lines on page 392. For our intellectual rationality, these are opposites. For the absolute reasons, they are interrelated and not essentially conflicting expressions of one and the same reality. So this is what we have to understand when Krishna is accepting to be tied to the rope. He doesn't become less divine. When he is saying Maya Mori Main Nahi Makhan Khayo, he doesn't become less divine. And actually, it makes it amazingly beautiful. See the delight. If the same thing is done by some other, but you know it is the divine who is playing Maya Mori Main Nahi Makhan Khayo. He has stolen, but you're not judging Krishna. See, it is something so amazing. Of course, I'm not going into why he stole and distributed and all that. Communism, original idea of communism, seed idea. But basically, this whole truth that the two are together, that's what the Isha Upanishad is telling us. Vidyancha, vidyancha, yastadvido bhayam saha. So, page 393. It is not surprising that because the human logic cannot understand the two together, so many acute thinkers with their eye on the facts of being and not on verbal distinctions should be driven to infer that the absolute is a fiction of the intelligence. Because if you say such things, you are leaving, what is the choice with the man on the road? You are telling him all this life is an illusion. The absolute is real, of which he has no usefulness in this life. He will say, okay, this is at least in my hand. Bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. He says, anyways, that absolute is too much for me to leave all this. But that's not. They are enriching each other. This is the idea that Sri Aurobindo brings us again and again. The ancient sages spoke indeed of Brahman negatively. They said of it, neti neti. It is not that. It is not that. But they took care also to speak of it positively. They said of it too, it is this, it is that. And we have that famous story in one of the Upanishads. Atreya probably, I may be mistaken. So where the disciple goes to the master and he asks him that, tell me about Brahman. He says, you find out. So the disciple meditates for 1 year and says, annam brahmeti. Matter is Brahman. He doesn't say, you idiot, this is what you have learnt here. He says, yes, you have a point, you are right, but go further. So then he meditates for another 1 year, as the story goes. He says, pranam brahmeti. Annam is annam because of its the energy that it is within it and it releases it. He says, good, you are getting closer to truth. I can't say you are wrong, but this is not the full truth. Find out. So he goes still further and he says, manome brahmeti. The mind is Brahman because the different properties in different things. Like nowadays, one of the biggest catch question is, why H2O develops the properties which we today recognize as water? So there is the qualitative aspect of life which we don't understand. It has implications even in genetics. But this is not a talk on genetics, so we'll leave it here. That why certain genes trigger, is there a relevance of prakriti, sattvic, or in if you take Ayurveda, then you have the three, you know, kapha, vata, pitta, on the genetic constitution, even when everything is same, what is called as epigenetics and the LL. So is there a difference? So people have found there is a difference. So there is a qualitative dimension of life which we don't understand. We have not studied. Science discarded it completely, saying that it has no meaning at all. But in spiritual science, it has a meaning. It's not just the outer quantity, but the guna. So you see, guna is sattva, rajas, tama. You can't measure it. It's an intrinsic property. This is a whole subject for realizing. But he's saying that he discovers mind puts the different gunas. So you have, if you eat this food, you will, it is tamo guna. If you eat this food, it is rajo guna. If you eat this, it is sattva guna. So now what is mind doing? It is classifying. So the guru says, very good, well done, but this too is not the complete truth. So he comes back after 1 year and says, now I have discovered vijnanam brahmeti. There is a great ordering intelligence which has classified things like this. On the basis of oneness, it has created multiplicity. That because of vijnana, not vijnana as we understand, it's not about science in this sense, but it is super science, if you want to use the word, that it is that one infinite reality which shapes itself in countless ways, one and multiplicity. The secret is with vijnana. Mind, you will see only the last bit. He says, well, you're there, but spend a little more time. Why is it all? You have understood everything, but why is it all? So after little more time, he says, anandam brahmeti. It's for the delight of oneness that you have the multiplicity. Changes the perspective, no? Even if we intellectually start, then people in our life, if we understand the delight of multiplicity, it changes everything. Then, oh, this fellow is opposing me, as the ego does. Always it's seeing enemies, real enemies, unreal enemies, turning others into enemies. But when we understand this world is for delight, then even warcraft is a delight. Because it's a joy for which you are fighting. And then you may die or live. And there have been people like that in that movie, Vikram Batra, actually. Ye dil mange more. You go back. He said, no, I want. There's a delight. Same with that movie, Ikkis. He says, no, I want to go and fight. And the commander says, no, 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 you're too young. And no, I want to fight this war. And he goes and fights the tank battle. He dies, but destroys so many tanks. Why? Because this is the delight. So those who either intuitively come in touch with it, or those who discover it through yoga, then life becomes beautiful and delightful. Just a little more and then we will stop. That, you know, both positive and negative are incomplete statement. And we have on page 394, one of the Mahavakyas, the universal particularizes itself in the individual. The individual contains in himself all the generalities of the universal. Sounds very big, but it's everyday truth. The difference between diamond and carbon. Same, absolutely same, except that it's in, what is it called? Isotope, or there is a little twist. It just turns this way and one becomes diamond, the other. What a joy. Imagine, you know, divine is playing with things. It gives us the secret of alchemy. Because once you understand this basis of one, you know, we are close to that. And one day, it is the principle behind cloning. That any cell can potentially become a cell which can multiply the creature. And we see it in the time of Mahabharata, when all the 100 children of Kaurava were clone children. All of them were brought up in those days test tubes. That's how they were brought up. It's not like Gandhari lived for 200 years having one child, after 2 years another child. They were cloned from one particular piece of meat which Vyas says, destroy this. He said, this is dangerous. It's a reminder of what can happen through science. So he says, this is not the way. Don't do this. But she insists, and then Bharadwaj Rishi puts them in kind of cloning process. 100 children come out, and we know what happened hereafter. So this is the truth that he is describing to us. Again, on page 395, it's very funny. A lot of places there is humor in Life Divine. Page 395, the sentence starts, the Absolute is not a skeptical logician. Denying the truth of all his own statements and self-expressions. Why? Because you have called Neti Neti. You ask God, is this yours? He will say, yes. He said, but you know, we had read this Neti Neti. He says, yes. What you read is correctly. But then you are saying, this is also me. He says, yes. Because this is also truth. So you see, he is not a skeptical logician. Oh, because somebody pronounced that I am supposed to be Neti Neti, this is not correct. No, I can't. I have to respect that professor. He's not doing that. He says, yes. None of you can bind me. Ha ha, Duryodhan, bandh mujhe to mujhe bandhne aaya hai. Ye dekh, gagan mujhme le hai. Ye dekh, pavan mujhme le hai. He shows that I am beyond all this. But then he says that I am sitting on your rath as the sarathi. They are not two. They are one reality. And then what the other soldier sees, who Barbary, that both sides Krishna is fighting. See, it changes the entire thing about life. So many stories come to my mind, but I am just, you know, because they are so clear, so beautiful. So he says, you can't deny him. But an existence so utterly and so intimately positive that no finite positive can be formulated which can exhaust it or bind it down to its definitions. And it's there, as I said again, that story in Mahabharata comes when Bhishma is completely demolishes everything of Arjun, and Arjun is at a point where he is going to kill him, and he is overtaken by that anger. Because he has been told, you are a weak fellow, you can't do this, that. So he takes it to heart that, no, I am going to kill today. And who else but Arjun? He is the... So there comes a point when Arjun is helpless. No rath, no chariot, no arrow, nothing. He is standing. And that moment, Shri Krishna does a magic. He has said, I will not pick up any weapons. He doesn't pick up a weapon. He picks up the wheel of the chariot. Puts it as a chakra. Now Bhishma is so much overpowered by anger. He throws salvos at that wheel. That's how the story goes. Because he is overtaken by anger. Oh, you're trying to defend him by lifting a wheel. I'll show you. So he throws that in the serial. They little bit modified. But actually he fights. And it discovered that they just don't go past this. So he is totally flabbergasted. He tries all kinds of arrows and then he discovers something is mistaken. And then he says, what is happening to my arrows? Nothing is going past you. He says, don't you see who is lifting the wheel? And then he reveals who he is. And then Bhishma says, I am so fortunate that today I have seen you in your original swarup. So you see, actually, someone who can reach that state can technically halt a whole army. Great yogis have done this. We see how when people let by occult magic throwing stones on Sri Aurobindo ashram. So the occultist said that within 25 meter radius, we cannot throw anything. And in fact, we cannot throw anywhere unless there is a medium. So they planted a medium. A man who joined the dining room became a medium, who was part of their gang. And they were targeting him wherever he was, because then they could materialize the stones. But nothing is coming near Sri Aurobindo and the mother. It's empowerment of the highest kind. It's not just about remembering God is everywhere, very nice, we pray to him, so what, everything, resigned to his marji. Yes, of course, but this is something much deeper. And then we will take one more and then we will stop. So he says, but while dealing with things, you have to isolate. It doesn't mean everything is same, but yes, potentially everything is same. By that isolation, isolation means this is a book, this is a table, this is necessary. Even physics will tell us, essentially it's same. By that isolation, we are indeed able to deal with it very practically, very effectively. And we think at first that the effectiveness of our action proves the entire and sufficient truth of our isolating and analyzing knowledge. This is where the problem comes. That because we are dealing with it in certain practical ways every time, we are conditioned that this is only this. But see how Mata Sita picks up a blade of grass, says, don't cross this. We can any time recover its total truth. Yogis will not do it because it will disturb the... But there is a possibility like that. Very effectively. And we think at... Okay. Afterwards, we find that by getting beyond it, we can arrive at a greater truth and a greater effectivity. The isolation is certainly necessary for first knowledge. So in the beginning you need to, this is world, this is God. Kena Upanishad starts by that. But then you have to arrive at the second step, that all this is God. That's what we see. Sri Aurobindo says Kena Upanishad is like graduation. What does it say? It says, Yan mansana manute yena hurmano matang tadev brahmantam vidhi nedam yadidam upasate. So that which the mind cannot know. Yan mansana manute. And yet that by which the mind knows itself, that which knows the mind, yena hurmano matam, the mind does not know it, but that knows the mind. He says, know that to be the Brahman which knows the mind. And not this that men seek hereafter. So that is Kena Upanishad. Isha Upanishad takes us to the post-graduation level. And the post-graduation level is, all this that is God. Atme va bhud vijanata tatrako moha ka shoka ekatvam anupashyata. So we'll stop here and continue tomorrow.